if I had told him, Dad, I'm going to be playing with Woody Herman's big band, he said, you made it. You did it. You really did it. You know, he would have been ecstatic.
That's clarinetist Richard Stoltzman remembering his recording with Woody Herman's Thundering Herd back in 1988 and how much his dad would have loved it. I'm Kathy Fuller. Richard Stoltzman played the very first clarinet recital ever at Carnegie Hall. He's won the big Avery Fisher Career Grant, 2 Grammys, and millions of fans over the years. And he's adventured into all kinds of music. There's just no one like him. And as much as he's feeling surprised by the arrival of his 75th birthday, he was even more surprised by the new box set of his complete RCA and Sony recordings on 40 CDs. I sat down with Richard Stoltzman to hear him tell a few of his many stories. In 1989, you made this recording, and Judy Collins had a couple of tracks on there.
Wow.
There's a great clip on YouTube of you on one of the morning shows with her, and I think it's Bill Douglas playing the piano.
Could be.
I was standing on a noisy corner, waiting for the walking green. Across the street he stood, and he played real good on his
That's Judy Collins. Inner Voices is the name of that recording, and that's from 1989. That was the first time you brought a singer into your...
Right. I think it's... I've never recorded with singer.
Mm-hmm.
I've recorded all their songs, like the arias.
Yes, so yes.
I sing all their songs, but I've not sung them with them. I think it was just... I remembered her... I guess we're probably pretty much the same age, but I remember her when I was at Cal Arts and hanging out a lot. And her words and music seemed to just pervade the atmosphere of my life at that time. I was a single guy and thinking about... What exactly am I supposed to be doing here? You know, I'm sort of teaching a little bit, but I don't know. And I play the clarinet, but like, who's listening to me? I'm in the middle of the desert out here at Cal Arts. You know, it was a kind of just before I'd left to go to Cal Arts, I played one studio gig with an orchestra, and it was on a session called Whales and Nightingales, and that was Judy Collins record, and the arranger had made a beautiful section for the clarinets in a kind of Brahmsian third little section, and you know, it was my first time to ever record in that kind of vein. And I bought the record and listened to myself with Judy Collins, you know. And I guess so that started to think. And then Jeremy Wald, he was the one who found out that Judy wanted to record Joni Mitchell's tune. And he said, that's it. And,
wow.
And then he loved Bill's music, and he wanted Judy to sing a piece of Bill's on the record. And so that's how it turned out. And, you know, and I added my 2 cents with when she sings a clarinet for free, then I sort of on purpose plays the beginning of the Brahms clarinet quintet. Just stick that in there. I thought, well, you know, I'm not on the street, but I'm going to play.
That's fantastic. Well, this is where we can talk about vibrato then. I mean, imitating a singer or being a singer. There was this great New York Times article about you, which began talking about you back in another life with your young family camping, and the thing that blew up the mattresses wasn't working, so you blew up six inflatable mattresses in like no time flat, and because you're a great clarinetist, and it was easy for you. And then you had a dream that your family was sleeping on your breath. And that, I thought that was such a touching kind of vision. But then you talk about your breath. This is what you do. You give your breath out to the world. Mm-hmm. And you've said things about vibrato, that the sound isn't alive without it. Is that basically right? Vibrato is that natural shake that comes at the end of when someone sings, for instance.
Right. And I think I was tending to emulate the songs that my dad played of Frank Sinatra and Tony Bennett a little bit, and Ella, of how they use the tone to shape the song and also give the meaning of the word a little more poignancy, and that the vibrato wasn't a on and off thing, and it wasn't actually anything that was precise. It was affected by the emotions of the word and also by the breath of the singer. And oftentimes, it would be a straight tone that, say, Frank Sinatra would sing until just about the last second and a half, and he would add a little bit of whatever you want to call it, vibrato, quiver, or accent to the sound that just gave it, oh, that's Frank Sinatra, that's for sure. And I think that's the personality that I found in it.
Here is a sampling of you sort of singing. This is the song My Funny Valentine. You're playing here with your son, the pianist, Peter John Stoltzman. From 1997, Peter John Stoltzman playing the piano and his father, Richard Stoltzman, playing the clarinet. Really, you know, it's like those great Bill Evans tunes where you have to wait so long for the tune to kick in, you know? But it's so dramatic. This is such a, is that your son who made that? He did that.
Yes.
Right. I remember you guys played that for us in the studio once.
Oh, really?
Yep, did. We've got another version. There's that subtle vibrato in there. It just seems natural to me, very natural. Do people have problem with clarinets playing vibrato?
Totally, yes. In fact, I was ostracized pretty much all of my adult
life
for using vibrato. And I think clarinetists feel that it's it dirties the sound, or it keeps the sound from being pure, or it goes back to the days when Reginald Kell was playing classical clarinet in England, and he used vibrato in his tone, and this was considered an anathema to American clarinet players, and they ostracized him from their society, basically.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
Wow.
But he sort of had the last laugh, because then he did the first recordings of some of the great works for clarinet with great pianists like Mieczysław Krzyżowski.
So there.
Yeah, so there.
You did this great CD of arias, you mentioned before.
Yeah.
Of course, now you're going to need to be acting like a singer. But there's this one thing with the is it Kalman Opperman? Is that
yeah,
how
you Kalman, say it? Yeah, Kalman.
That was your teacher.
Kalman Opperman.
And he has
teacher,
this amazing yeah. clarinet choir. Listen to
yeah.
this. You know, it takes a while for you to realize that these are all clarinets. I mean, there's
yeah.
nothing here but clarinets. But there's a groove here. No? Isn't there?
Yeah.
That's just so fantastic.
That's Cal Opperman. God bless Mika, my wife, for arranging the Weill Hall for his 90th birthday.
Oh.
And he was able to come. And he not only was able to come, but he was deciding what the music should be. I told him different things I thought would be nice. And he said, what about Opperman, all Opperman? Okay. So we did. But the last piece was Danny Boy with a Kalman Opperman clarinet choir. And his son brought him on the stage in a wheelchair, and he conducted this. But it was not in any way maudlin. It was, you know, like breathtakingly elegant and full of those little turns of phrases that singers do, but he made his whole choir do that with his stick. He had a great stick technique, and I'm sure anybody who was at that concert never forgot that. But this, he never talked about vibrato.
When did you study with him?
I studied with him from the time I left Yale, which was in 1967.
So you were in your mid-20s at that point.
Until when he died.
Wow. So he didn't talk about vibrato? How can that be?
No. There are a lot of things that he didn't talk about. He just did.
I see.
And he would sometimes say, just shut up, do what I do, you know,
mm-hmm.
or do what I say. But then he would demonstrate, I mean, he'd just play the clarinet, and he'd always play some Jewish melody or a ballad from some Broadway show that he was, because he worked for his life in the pit, and that's, he did that from 8 until 11, and then the rest of this time was his to teach and do whatever. And there was always this beautiful, beautiful singing quality, which he wouldn't tell you about, or he wouldn't say, you want to know how I sound like this? No, nothing.
Do you teach that way, demonstrably mostly?
Most of my clarinet students, I haven't had that many, probably, you know, like 15 or so in my life, but they don't want to know about it. They want to know about it, but they don't want to do it. They know that I'm doing it, and I'll go through all the kind of mechanical things about how this can happen, but mostly what I'm, if when I'm teaching or when I'm thinking about using the instrument, I'm thinking about the voice and singing. So I said, you know, you don't have to play with vibrato, but please take this line, and sing it with your voice. Don't play it once. Now, you know, and they'll do it, and they say, I can't sing. That's okay. You don't have to sing. And, okay, now, try to make your clarinet sound like the way you sounded. And this is my goal, really, I think, with anybody, is find your sound. Where is that? Well, it's not in the technique. It's not in the reed. It's not even in the air. It's in the heartbeat and the part of ear. So that, and that'll be your sound when you use your ear, when you use your ear to listen to yourself and in reflection, listen to what you ideally would like to hear.
Well, you have collaborated with so many greats, Richard Good and the Tokyo Quartet, James Galway, Yo-Yo Ma, we haven't mentioned him. He thrives on collaborating, and mm-hmm. he has always said he likes to be outside of his comfort zone. That's one of the things I remember him telling me, that musically he's best when he's outside of his comfort zone. Are you like that?
No.
You'd rather be in there.
I want to always be as comfortable as possible. And I would say what Yo-Yo probably means is he wants people to challenge him.
I see.
And he wants to be around people who aren't just going to kowtow to him. He wants people to say, you do this, you do that, and try it.
Yo-Yo Ma, Emmanuel Axe, and Richard Stoltzman playing Brahms, the clarinet trio. Brahms always is there in your life. I get the feeling that he's just kind of a part of what you are.
Yeah, okay, so I'll tell you this. My idea is that Mika and I told you we went to Hamburg to visit the birthplace of Brahms, and they had a little place there to show some of his early manuscripts and everything. And they had a picture of Richard Muhlfeldt. I'd never seen a picture of Richard Muhlfeldt.
What did he look like?
Well, he looked like a dude, you know?
I mean, this is the man who inspired Brahms out of retirement, played the clarinet so beautifully somehow that Brahms wrote his greatest chamber piece.
Right, and, you know, he's young, much younger, I think probably 23 years younger than Brahms. But, I mean, everybody had a beard, so he had a beard. But what's Madonna say? He had a stance, pose. Whatever that, you know, he looked like he knew he was good. And but I found this out about him, which may not be true, but I'm passing it on all the time anyway, that he was a violinist. He studied violin, and clarinet, picked up the clarinet later. So my opinion is that Brahms heard plenty of clarinet players because he wrote for them in the orchestra and everything. But he was retired and said, that's it. And then he heard Richard Muhlfeldt's clarinet. And what did Richard Muhlfeldt play like? We don't know, but he taught himself. So what did he teach himself from? From his experience of playing the violin. Therefore, my feeling is that Brahms heard, well, this guy, and he tried to tell the clarinet, he's like a nightingale or some kind of singing bird. So I think Brahms, for the first time, heard the tone of the clarinet, but with the life of vibrato in it. Hmm. And this was it. And ba-dum! Opus 114, Opus 115, Opus 120, number 1 and 2. And thank God, praise the Lord, hallelujah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Sounds absolutely believable to me.
Okay.
I believe you.
Just don't pass it on to anybody.
Well, so far, so here's your life in this box, and there are so many recordings I can't get to. The Great Brazil recording, all these fabulous things that it's so nice to learn, too, that I learned just now today with you, is that you really kind of pulled your hair out over which ones you wanted in this box.
They didn't ask me anything, really, about it, but they did give credit to everybody on the records. And that was the most important thing to me. What really pisses me off about the cloud and all that is that you get this stuff down from the cloud and you just listen to it and snap your fingers or close your eyes or whatever you do. But you don't realize all the people that are making this. There's a name of everybody in Woody's band. I'm so excited about
that.
When I made
the
record, RCA didn't put their names on.
They
didn't, because I said, what the? Well, you're doing this. And they said, well, this is usually our policy is the band, or not the band, but the ensemble. We don't list the individual names of the people of the ensemble.
Wow.
So they've got all their names in there. And Claire Fisher, with the Brazilian guys, all the percussion players, anyway, the guys,
they're all there.
They're there, and their names are there, and it's in a box, and it's not in the cloud, and I feel so gratified to have all these people recognized.
Well, we are gratified that this is so available now. It's the 40 CD set. Richard Stoltzman. And I'm going to ask you to sign mine. You can sign it on the red part on the inside.
Okay.
It's called the Complete RCA Album Collection. Of course, Richard Stoltzman has so much more to do. He has this great duo with your wife, Mika Stoltzman.
Yeah.
The marimbist and teaching you the groove.
Teaching me the groove and making me wake up to reality that life is going on. And there are composers that she, you know, went down to New York a couple of weeks ago. John Zorn, a great New York composer. I don't know anything about him, you know. But she said, John, you could write a piece for me. He did. It's on our CD. And last couple of weeks, she's, could you write a piece for both of us, maybe? He said, sure. When? Well, when would you like it? Ah, my God. And so Mika is having sort of my... the 75th sort of a thing at Zankel Hall in New York.
That's next year. That's this year.
No, this year. November 7th. And John Zorn said, I'll write it for this occasion. And so Mika's also getting me out, you know. I've gone to the Regatta Bar, but I've never played in a Regatta. But she's got us going to the Regatta Bar.
It's about time.
Well, yeah. So it's kicking butt.
Richard Stoltzman, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure, as always.
Kathy, is this being recorded?